You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with The Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I'm joined by Raj Bhaskar. He's actually the former CEO of Visual Homes. It was a software company focused on property management and real estate solutions for public and affordable housing. He actually sold that business and then has started a new company called Hurdler, which is actually an app. It's an accounting software app that's currently free, and it's literally perfect for small business owners. I'm super excited for the interview. So Raj, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ken, thanks for having me on board. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, I'm glad to have you on. You know, you're not our typical guest, but, you know, we like to venture outside the box occasionally, and software is something that's always intrigued me. In fact, I was a software consultant for my first years out of school and always kind of had a bent towards software. So I always love to get somebody on that's been successful in that space. But you've also done some real estate investing yourself. Maybe talk a little bit about some of the, you know, kind of where you are in terms of your real estate investing.
Sure. I think I'm like a lot of folks where, so I have, I lived in a condo for many years, and I bought the condo about 10 years ago. I lived in the same condo for 8 years, which I don't know how many people have done that before.
Nice.
But I got married.
Usually not by choice. A lot of people get stuck in the condo. They can't sell it, right?
So I did buy it at the peak of the market, and I always say I did that consciously. I didn't do it 100% consciously. I mean, I knew the pricing was outrageous, but it was at a time where I actually somehow got first selection in this building, this new they're converting this warehouse into condos, and it was a cool property. And somehow I got lucky to get first selection.
Nice.
And at that time, you had to spend the night outside, like spend the night overnight to get on a waiting list.
Holy
That's how
hot
the market
wow.
was. We're talking 2006, like yep. peak. I got that. And so I lived there for 8 years. I got married towards the end. We lived there for a little bit. And then, you know, it's time to start planning to have a family. And we started off by getting a dog. And we had a yard and everything. But I bought a house. And when we bought the house about a little bit over 3 years ago, and we got, interest rates were really low. So we got a house that was about three times the value of the condo, and had to get a jumbo loan on it.
Nice.
And did a 7-year ARM at a very low interest rate. It's like 2.24%.
Nice. That's like free money, man.
Yeah. It was pretty interesting. You know, there's that stigma around ARMs, but
yeah,
it doesn't really apply in this situation because I'm watching. Yeah, I know when the calendar is running out. The mortgage is like around just under $4,000 a month on the house, and condo is paid off, and the rent that the condo commands is $4,000 a month.
That's crazy. And the condo's worth, what'd you say, a third
or
what the house is worth?
Yeah, like 25% to a third.
Oh my gosh. Well, you're in DC though, where rents are kind of crazy, right?
Yeah. But still it's relative, right? Because I only lived like 20 minutes outside.
I got you.
Yeah. Pretty nuts.
So it is like rent arbitrage where you've essentially, got a condo that you own outright that's paying for a house that's worth a heck of a lot more, but covering it 100%.
Yeah. So, and then just watching, like I have 4 more years left. So let's say 3.5 years, I'll see what my options are then because the condo is appreciating. Right. Because there's limited land in every major city.
Sure.
I'm watching that. And what's going on around the condo is all these new buildings are popping up in the limited land that was left. And my theory was basically that in the short run, while they're building those, rents won't be that great or value won't be as high because people want the new units. But once those buildings are fully occupied and now you have even more critical mass on the block
mm-hmm.
or on these blocks around, you'll have more of a community, then the value should go up again.
Mm-hmm. And are you seeing that you're seeing prices rise then in the area where the condo is? Nice.
Yeah. And I think, I'm bullish. I'm pretty, there's no risk really because I'm not paying anything right now. and it's, you know, I'm reducing my cash outtake spend, basically, because you know, I have my software venture now, and I'm putting all of my money into that, and so it's nice. Like, it's not going out of the house really.
That's a very cool strategy. You know, people talk about, you know, buying a duplex and renting out the other side, and, you know, or renting to roommates. But I don't think we've ever talked about this sort of arbitrage where you buy one unit outright and then leverage that up into something worth three or four times as much, but where the rent covers your nut on the new one. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's something I don't really talk about it too much, but I thought for your audience it'd be cool to know, because it's out there and there's nothing wrong with it.
No, it's a killer strategy.
Yeah, and you get two. I have two chances. Like, I have the house going up in value and the condo going up in value. Both.
That's right.
So you just, as long as you keep an eye on it, and that's a big theme with me. Like, in general, things I do, I monitor. Like, I keep an eye on things.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's smart. So you've got some creative. Honestly, you're probably the same size as a lot of folks that listen to our show that maybe have one or two rental units and they're interested in maybe stepping out and doing more. But in addition to, you know, doing some real estate investing on the side, that's not your core business. You're actually a software developer. Talk to us a little bit about how you got into software development and even in kind of the housing space.
Sure. So for mine, it starts all the way back in college, where I went to GW. I'm based in D.C., and I went to GW in D.C. As part of their seven-year engineering and law program. So wow. I started off in computer science, and I pre-admitted into their intellectual property, their law school for intellectual properties law, and they were number one in the country for IP law at the time.
Huh.
But I had to do engineering, and by the third semester, I had the top two developers in the class basically giving me their programs, which meant I wasn't writing them anymore. And it became clear to me by the end of that semester that I should switch into business, because I wasn't actually writing the programs. Ironically, I really didn't enjoy writing the programs, and I wasn't that good at it.
Yeah.
Not towards the end, anyway. Intro classes were pretty easy for me, but advanced were not. And so I switched into business, and I graduated in 1999, and that's like I got to put in a good solid year when I graduated into a wireless software startup in 1999. Like,
wow.
There was no ubiquity in mobile devices, but there were Palm 3s and Palm 5s, and you could attach a modem to the back of them. And you talk about, like, now everyone's paying for data. You had to, back then, I had to pay like $1 for every time you used the data, like a ping. Every time you pinged something, it was like $1.
That's crazy. That's nuts. It's amazing how fast things are changing, how quickly technology is evolving underneath our doorsteps. Even, you know, and not to digress too much, but even the data thing, like, just here in recent months, it's like now it's unlimited plans. I mean, everybody's switching to unlimited plans. Data is about to become essentially just a package instead of where you're tracking your data. It's where, you go back 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. It was just such a different landscape then. So you actually came out of school same time I did, 99. I mean, I think I'd had a cell phone I got a cell phone right as I came out of college.
Yeah, same. I did it too, because I was job hunting. And I didn't want them calling my house, like my parents' house.
Right.
Now, I'm Indian, so I love my parents, but I just didn't want them answering the phone because I thought it wouldn't help my job prospects.
That's hilarious. You know, I got a cell phone because I was I did an internship like in another state, and I ran up like a $900 phone bill trying to talk to my then girlfriend. Oh, we're now, and then, you know, now it's, you don't even think about long distance. You know, nobody even uses the word long distance anywhere. It's just, you know, it's part of the plan. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I threw down on the StarTAC. It was $330 after tax, which was like nuts. I was debating it for 2 weeks, and then I got it, and that ended up being the thing that got me my job at the wireless software startup, because the CEO of the startup, I was interviewing with him, and the whole interview was about my phone, because he was debating the same thing.
Hilarious.
I did that for a year, and I wasn't doing development. I was doing business development, and I worked with the CEO, and that's, I got into my own thing right after that. My dad had, my dad has a master's in computer science. My younger brother, who's 9 years younger, has a bachelor's in computer science from UCLA.
Wow.
He's my younger brother is my co-founder on this venture.
Oh, very cool.
And My dad had a government contracting business, and it started in 1988. And this was like, he went from drying cars at a car wash as his first job in this country to hitting the Inc. 500 3 years in a row, 93, 94, 95.
Wow. If that's not the American story, man, I don't know what it is. Awesome.
Yeah. And my mom was Avon lady.
Oh yeah. Heck yeah.
So like hustlers, trying to make it happen. So some of it's in my blood in that regard. And yeah, so I really enjoyed the business aspect of creating something, creating value from scratch, like creating your own product, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's, some people enjoy creating physical products. So this was a soft product and I really enjoyed that. And then how do you grow that business and provide that value and help your clients actually get the value? And that's kind of how I got into it. And he had, someone had approached him with this small company, housing software, DOS software company. And they said, that you don't have to, give any money up front to buy this company. Hmm. And so then I got involved with that, and it was basically like a 5-year note where you don't have to pay anything until the end of the first year.
Nice.
So it's pretty low risk, and I was a young guy, so basically took that and rebuilt a product from scratch and started marketing it to medium to large housing agencies all around the country. And 10 years later, we were managing 500,000 units of affordable housing across the U.S. and 2 million tenants or residents. And we were doing around $200 million in monthly rental payment processing through the platform.
Oh, my gosh.
And for affordable, like if that was market rate, it would have been like $1 billion a month.
Right.
So it was all financial and regulatory platforms for housing, but basically making the agencies run smoother, making sure they stay compliant, and tracking all these things, all their financials.
So you did that for 10 years. And how many were there employees when you bought it? What did you build up to? Just curious.
Yeah, so it started with 5 employees, and then we transitioned and then built our own team. And I think then so it was our own team from scratch eventually. And so we built it up to 50 employees.
50 employees. I mean, I was going to say that's a lot of, I'd imagine that's a lot of housing providers that you guys were working with to get to that volume. That's a lot of manpower, I would imagine.
Yeah. So we were working with about 70 agencies across the country, mostly tier 1, tier 2 cities like DC Housing Authority, Dallas Housing Authority, and DC, like that's my home. That's my home. That, DC became a client 6 years in.
Wow.
Not like the first year.
Right.
And that was a real proud moment. Like, I was so happy. I remember taking the subway from our office to theirs and telling them about that.
Yeah. I've been waiting to get you guys. Finally, you came on board.
Yeah. And we went with real meaning that it's not, software. Yeah. We have the best software and our references will share that with you. But like, this is meaningful. Like, this is our home.
Mm hmm. Yeah. So were you, what did that look like? Were you like a president, CEO? What was your role in the company?
Yeah, CEO.
CEO. And then I guess initially you were out selling, these different agencies and whatnot, and then eventually brought on sales teams and fulfillment and client service and all that.
Well, so interestingly in that venture, I didn't have a sales team. I tried that model. It didn't really work for us. Because something didn't resonate. I don't know. We're working with communities and I don't know that communities need to be sold.
Uh-huh.
So what I used to do, I actually work with all of my clients personally. And I would take a project manager and a couple of our customer success staff and trainers with us to each agency. And all of my trainers had previously worked in housing agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew the domain knowledge and they understood the needs. And so we would just go and give a presentation. And kind of do it that way. And then I would keep in touch with clients. We would get maybe a dozen clients a year, new clients a year and built up.
Interesting.
I led with service, basically.
Yeah, I got you.
References, reputation.
So how different was the software compared to like a, property management software?
So it's very similar. It's a, it's the same thing, except that you're doing a lot you're doing a lot of compliance and regulations around, so waiting list management. Are these citizens qualified for this housing, right? Or is their income too high?
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that. Different rules. Some states have different rules, so we automated all of that. And there's also like inspection requirements. So if you have investors that are listening that are Section 8 owners, mm-hmm. So things like that, like we took care of that, the compliance around that, the Section 8 payments, all kinds of stuff that simple property management wouldn't work for.
Right.
Like all the reporting to HUD, things like that.
Right. A little more specialized. Now, were there many other vendors in that space, or did you guys sort of have it to yourself?
No, I mean, I feel like there's no space that doesn't have competitors. So
sure.
Even in this little space, I'd say there were probably 10 companies that played in the space. And for ourselves, there are one or two companies that we would compete with. And so I could track a progression in 10 years where we had to be number three, so get a seat at the table. And then the hardest... It's easier to be number three than it is to be number two, because number two, they, a lot of times the agency would bring it down to three, and then they drop the third, and then do ultimate due diligence between one and two. So being number two is very expensive because you didn't win the deal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I had to go through being number two to get to number one.
Gotcha.
It's like a rite of passage, basically.
Was it typically RFP then, where you're submitting all sorts of information just to get in front of them?
Quite a bit, definitely.
Okay.
And what I found, for us, I discovered early on that reputation was going to be big for us. Reputation and references. So we focused on making our customers successful, which sounds... that's how it should be.
Sure.
But that's not how it always is, because it's easier to just... say whatever, sell people on whatever and go get a deal. Mm-hmm. It's much harder to actually make sure your customer is satisfied. So we did the hard work and it paid off.
So you ran this business for 10 years and then you eventually sold the business?
Yep. We were acquired by a company called Yardi, who has half of all U.S. apartment buildings using their software for property management. It's an excellent company. Best reputation in the industry. And it was a founder-led company even still. Anand Yardi is the founder and original software developer.
Wow.
Company over 30 years. Pretty nuts. They have, I think now, 5,000-6,000 employees.
Oh, my gosh. Crazy. So did you stay on at all after you got acquired?
I stayed on about a year and a half.
Okay.
I actually wasn't required, which is rare.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I wasn't required to stay on, but it was important for me to make sure that my team and my clients – had a smooth transition. We were taken care of. And, I mean, all my customers and employees are still there. It's 6 years later.
Really? Wow. Okay, so you sold out. You had a very successful first venture. Now, what have you been doing for the last 6 years?
So the last 6 years, after selling in 2010, I was there for a year and a half, and then I started building my next venture, which is called Hurdler. It's a mobile finance app for any entrepreneur, including real estate investors, to track all the business finances or finances around their investment or their business, whether it's side income, real estate, even Uber drivers. Like, we have over 50,000 Uber drivers tracking their business finances.
Really?
On the set, because we built this tax engine for non-W-2 income.
I gotcha. So small independent contractor types.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, people have different income sources, and for me, it's like, I look at everything, even my own house, like, yeah, we're living in it, but, like, we just don't go and spend whatever we want on it. Like, it's an investment, and that's, like, one of the biggest assets on my balance sheet, and, I mean, I consider everything, like, whatever we put into it, what are we going to get out of it,
mm-hmm.
Beyond just living. And so I think it's important for everyone to know those numbers.
Absolutely. Well, and then I think it's common for a lot of real estate investors to jump in and maybe do a house or two, and it's easy enough. They can kind of keep track of it on spreadsheets and give it to their CPA. But once you start doing a handful more, even four or five houses, you flip one, you're renting one, all of a sudden your finances can get complex really quick, especially if you're not tracking it. And so that's, you know, the conversation you and I had before we jumped on the podcast. I appreciate the fact that you come at a lot of people from that angle of tracking your expenses is like one of the most important things you do as a business owner to make sure that you're protecting your profitability. Maybe speak to that for a minute.
Definitely. Like, and you know, it's, I mean, nobody loves doing this stuff, right? When I got out of, you know, after exiting my prior venture, I looked at, you know, what's going on out there in the, in this space, like in accounting space and tracking, and nothing really changed except that things moved from your desktop to the cloud. But mm-hmm. from a user experience, that's not really changing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at that time, like I was looking at just mobile trends, and now it's obvious, but like 4 or 5 years ago, if I told someone I was building a mobile finance app, half of the people were like, why would I want to have my finances on my phone?
Yeah. That's so now true. It's obvious. Everything. Yeah. Everything's on your phone. You live on your phone now, right?
Yeah. And I said, I don't know. I didn't have a good answer. I said, I don't know, but all the numbers are showing there's going to be crazy growth on mobile. So I feel like I should just focus on that. And I'm glad we stuck with that. But main thing, so if you're running a business, I mean, how are you supposed to make decisions if you don't even know what your financial situation is, right? We see these shows on TV all the time, even like restaurant shows where they've lost like $1 million. Like they've pulled all of their retirement out to put it on this restaurant. Like you're wondering like what on earth were they thinking? Like they never, it's because they never looked at their expenses.
Yeah.
Like, there are things out there now. It's pretty easy to see what your total expenses are. Like, you know, you don't have to use anything sophisticated. Like the simplest thing you can do, even if you have, like I have one condo, all you have to do is open up a separate bank account and credit card that's dedicated to that one property that I own, so that that's where all the rental fees go, or rent deposits, mm-hmm. and that's where I charge all my expenses to that card that's linked with that account, and nothing else. Like I don't mix it with anything personal.
Mm-hmm.
Like just like that, without using any fancy software, now, like even if a year goes by and I didn't actually look at it, like I could see the total financials right there.
Hmm. That's, I mean, that in and of itself, I bet there's so many small entrepreneurs or contractors who mix and match their credit cards or their personal accounts with their business, and there's a lot of bleed over, and then it just becomes so complex, where I think just the simple act of separating out your accounts just makes a world of difference in tracking.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is, like, because this is where people don't track their expenses because it's tedious.
Mm-hmm. Right?
But if you do some of these quick, simple tricks, it eliminates the tediousness, but it also increases your profit because all of those, generally, those expenses are going to be 100% deductible.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can lower your taxable income, obviously your after tax, your true profit, that goes up. Like, and that's why you were doing it in the first place, was to make money. So why wouldn't you leverage that little trick?
So talk to you for a second maybe about what you call the true profit formula and how that's different from what most people track.
Sure. So profit, I think, as most people know, it's just simply earnings minus expenses. Mm-hmm. What you have left over is your profit. And what I call a true profit is your earnings minus your expenses minus your taxes. Right? Mm-hmm. So that the key extra element that I'm adding is your taxes, because we're talking about income sources that you owe taxes on. So it's not like you're on a payroll on a W-2 and the tax is already taken out. You have a tax obligation. So you should be aware of what that is ongoing. And that affects like things that you do, right? So, but that's the key thing. Like if you look at where I've spent a lot of my time in the last 5 years, it's how do you optimize and leverage those numbers? Like when we talk about true profit, you have earnings minus expenses minus taxes. So then we know the best way to increase your profit, you have three key ways. So you can increase your earnings, or you can decrease your expenses, or you can decrease your taxes. Any combination. I mean, if you can do all three, obviously your profit will shoot through the roof.
But if you can just pick your expenses or pick your taxes and implement a couple strategies, then again, definitely another way to start increasing your, you know, your margins, your profitability.
Yeah, and I think like your listeners, like I think there's definitely low hanging fruit for everyone who's listening on ways to really decrease your expenses or even leverage what I call strategic expenses that should really increase your profit.
So talk, I guess, for a minute about Hurdler. And I'm just curious because it's an app that's tracking these things similar to like a more robust program like a QuickBooks. What's the advantage of using like a Hurdler over something a little bit more robust?
So if you're a type of person who's not really tracking anything, then you'll want to start with something simple that just does the job. Does what you need it to do in a few seconds, and you can move around, move about your day. So our Hurdler app is a mobile app, and basically you can track. It simply tracks your earnings and your expenses for whatever business you want, or if it's your real estate investment property, you can track that in there. And then whenever you'd like, you can just tap on a button to email a detailed financial report to your accountant. So let's say it's like tax filing time. You can just tap a button. It'll send that detailed report to your accountant, and you don't have to spend too much time with your accountant either.
Very cool. And so, I mean, real world practical example of this is you're making an expenditure for one of your rental properties, and you just plug it right in. Hey, I just went to Home Depot and bought some paint or whatever. You put it right in Hurdler, and there it is. You don't have to think about it. Is there any syncing with bank accounts or anything like that?
Yeah, we sync with almost 20,000 bank accounts and credit cards.
Wow.
Okay. So like we even have thousands of Airbnb hosts using the app to manage their host property.
Really?
So it's like, yeah. So it's like, it's pretty similar, right? Because they're also investment real estate investors, the ones that own their unit. And so we pull in their Airbnb income and they track all the expenses like cleaning and turnover and things like that. And then they get a 1099 from Airbnb, and then you package all that up, send it to the accountant, maximize your profit from that unit.
That's very cool. And you've never even had to log on to your computer, and it's just all been input through your phone or synced with your bank account. And then you just go there and maybe update it with some additional information to classify it right or whatever.
Yep.
And what about reporting inside the app?
Yeah. So reporting's built right in, and you can see, you know, there's everything's like tap and go, right? So you have P&Ls, you have your balance sheet, your cash flow statements, you have weekly trends, monthly, year to date, like everything's just right there with a few simple taps, and then you can share it with anyone you'd like. And then we have a cool feature where we let you sync our app with your own personal cloud. So whether it's your Dropbox or Google Drive or Box or even Microsoft OneDrive, you can actually sync our app with your own cloud, so it stores all your reports in your own cloud. Because we're not building a business on keeping your data hostage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Interesting, man. So what is the – I'm just curious, what's the price tag on Hurdler?
Hurdler is currently free.
Is it really? It's a free app?
Yep. What's, I can't say like it'll be like that for the rest of life, but
– Sure.
Yeah. I mean it's – we've had it free out there for a while now, and it's getting good – good reviews.
Man, that's so. What's your revenue model on this thing? Is it you have in app advertising or anything?
No, there isn't any of that. So yeah,
you're just a really good guy that just wants to give out free software.
Well, yeah, I mean, so it's really, you know, the right order of things is to really provide value.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then when you provide value and your users and customers like agree like that you're providing value, then in general, like most people don't have a problem sharing that value. And so, like we just launched an app for real estate agents with Keller Williams. They're like the world's largest real estate franchise by agent count. And so on that one, we have it. They can track the first $1,000 in deductions for free, and then they can refer out to add on, and then it's like $200 a year or $20 a month. And in there, we're focused, like they're getting P&Ls at the listing level, and it integrates with Keller Williams back end. Like it pulls all their listings and commissions all the way back to January 1.
Wow.
So we did a lot of work around that. And so it's like wherever, but the goal there is to provide them more than $2,000 in annual savings.
Sure, right.
Each
yeah.
time. So like we have to give a solid return. Like I'm a big believer in that. I always say I'm the same person in my house as I am when I walk out the front door. I only have one set of values. It's my personal values that I apply to any business that I do. So that means basically, like, I want to have raving fans out there. I don't want people feel. I want people feeling good about us. You know, I want them to see it. I want a smile on their face if they ever get charged from us. They're like, wow, that's awesome. This is such a good deal. And, you know, like I talk about when I get my Netflix charge for $10 a month, mm-hmm. I have a smile on my face. But when I have my cable company charge, you get pissed off because you don't really get any value and you feel hostage. Like, my wife's in television PR, so she needs to have access to certain channels that you can only get through cable.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, we would have cut the cord. I've tried cutting the cord like 3 times. yeah. But like, so one lends itself to referability, the other doesn't.
Sure.
Yeah. I've never heard anybody speak positively about a cable company.
Yeah, this is so true. Yeah, I feel like my cable bill is really fair. They charge me probably about the right amount. I don't think I've ever heard that out of anybody's mouth.
Yeah, and they're advertising.
Yeah. That's right.
Like now, like if I click the whatever menu button, first I have to see this ad and then I have to get out of that. It's like I'm paying them $100, $120 a month to run ads on my TV.
It's crazy. I mean, their time is coming. There's no doubt about it. I mean, mm-hmm. when you look at all the streaming services, it's only going to continue moving in that direction. But you're right. To your point, I agree 100% with you. I mean, there's some things that you feel the value that are worth paying for and other things that are not. So for you to create software that you feel adds value, and at this point you haven't even asked for anything, but I guess the model is at some point in the future you flip the switch and say, hey, it's $2 a month. You know, you can delete it if you don't think it's worth it, but hopefully you think it's worth it. And probably most people at that time will be like, well, yeah, I'm getting enough value. I don't mind paying a few bucks a month or whatever the subscription is.
Yeah. And that's what we do. And we've been polling our users and it'll be, you know, whenever it is, if there ever is a charge, it'll be something that's a no brainer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool, man. I love the model. Yeah. So at this point, it's just bringing on more members, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Just to grow the base. And there's value, I guess, in a company just based on how many users you have.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Very cool. And there was another give that you had out there as well. Was it a website with tax deductions? What was that again?
Oh, yeah, sure. 99deductions.com. Okay. Uh-huh. And so we built this site really to help any entrepreneur learn about the different tax deductions available to them without having to like read 20, 30 different blogs all over the internet. And the idea here, you can actually go to the site and you can say that I'm a landlord or I'm a real estate investor, and it'll tell you, you can say you're an Airbnb host and it'll tell you here are the top 5 deductions for an Airbnb host.
Very cool. But,
and so we did it in a way that you know, it's for a normal person like me. Like, I can actually read and understand what the hell they're talking about mm-hmm. without having to go consult somebody. And so basically to get educated really quickly, and then if you have more questions, then you can, you're more educated before you talk with your accountant.
Sure.
We're not trying to replace your accountant or anything. It's just we want your time with your accountant to be optimized.
Absolutely. Yeah, and just you should be educated regardless. You don't want to rely 100% on an accountant. You should understand your business.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Man, I love the business model. It's fun talking to a fellow entrepreneur, even if it's not necessarily in the exact same space as of most of our listeners. But I'll make sure that we put up the show notes because I'd love to send people to Hurdler. I'm super intrigued by it. I think it makes a ton of sense, especially for the smaller real estate investors that aren't doing a crazy ton of transactions. Yep. Why not keep it on your phone? Why in the world do you need to log on to your computer to do it? You get your phone on you all day long, and it's free. I mean, crap. I pay a heck of a lot more than that for my accounting software. That's for sure. So we'll put it up in the show notes. It's Hurdler, which is HURDLR, right? Hurdler.com.
Yep, correct.
And then feel free to check out 99 deductions as well if you want some specific tax deductions that maybe fit to your business model. But Raj, man, I really appreciate this interview. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, Ken, I really appreciate you taking the time and having me.
Yeah, take care. We'll talk soon.
Okay, take care.
Hey folks, it's Ken again, and I want to talk to you for just a quick second about becoming a private lender with our company, Georgia Residential Partners. If you've got money right now sitting on the sidelines, maybe it's in a bank account earning less than 1%, or maybe it's in the stock market and you're worried about where the stock market is headed, you might want to consider becoming a private lender with our company. Where you might be getting 1% to 2% on a CD or a money market account right now, when you become a private lender with us, you're actually well into the double digits in terms of return on investment. Again, if you've got money that's not working for you right now, it's sitting on the sidelines, and you want to get it into investment that's safe, that's passive, and has the opportunity to get you well into the double digits, please reach out to me. You can actually contact us through our website at dealfarm.net. Go to the Contact Us page. It goes right into my inbox, and I will reply and set up a time to talk. Thanks so much for listening to The Deal Farm. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.